Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Hey, go-getters. Let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on NoomLife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
Hey, I'm Ruben. My band and I have a new song. I'm also a tow truck driver. When you move over and slow down, you're making sure I get to go home at the end of the day and see my bandmates.
When you see flashing lights, remember, they're not just roadside workers. Thank you for moving over and slowing down.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's the sixth and final episode of your preview season series. It's been a lot of fun. We hope you've enjoyed the course of these episodes that we've released over the last 2 weeks or so. Today, we are looking at Serie A. We are going to Italy for our final preview as well, Calcio returns this weekend. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today. And joining me is the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai. How you doing, mate?
Hello. Yes, I'm very well, thank you. I'm very excited for the return of Serie A. All of our second leagues last year, I think. And it's only got better and more fun and more exciting over the summer, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's there's a lot to like about this Serie A season, a lot to be intrigued by. So I'm looking forward to it too. And of course, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, very, very good. Looking forward to a new season in another country. But, and yeah, don't forget, I've got that secret little fixture to come up, haven't I? AC Milan v Juventus. I'm planning to go to that one. So I'm more excited than ever because I'm actually going to go to a game. I don't think I've been to a Serie A match before. I've been to Champions League games in Italy, but never a Serie A match. So big season for me.
There you go. There you go. That is exciting for you.
It is.
And what a game to go to as you're kicking off. Yeah. A clash of titans, shall we say. Ooh. And well, to be fair, talking of those two teams, maybe we should start at the top of the league. And this title battle, obviously AC Milan are reigning Scudetto champions, Dean. Are they gonna hold on to this?
Probably not, but we'll see. We'll see. I'll dig into the title race, shall I? Because let's face it, I only really know about the top three or four teams in this league, and you two like digging around into the depths of it and watching the cappuccino
the
games.
The Mirkwood, yeah.
Yeah, I don't have as much time to indulge. I'd love to, I really would, but as it is, I'll just take the glamour at the top of the league. And yeah, we'll probably just start by recapping on how the league table ended. AC Milan did win the league. They did have to go right to the end of the season. But they pipped into the post. They won the league in the end by 2 points. They got to 86. In third place was actually Napoli. They got 79 points. And Juve were back on 70 points in fourth. I say back in fourth. At one point, we didn't think Juve were going to get as high as that. So actually, it was a bit of achievement in the end. When I'm discussing this title race, I'm only going to talk about three teams. I'm afraid Napoli are not coming into my part of this conversation. So we'll get into that later, but I'm going to start with Juve, who, to be honest, I think are a bit of a mess. They are basically the Man United of Italy. These two teams, I presume they've got a WhatsApp group between them and just talk about absolute chaos, because they're as bad at running things as each other. They're swapping players that aren't very good. I just don't really know what the plan is with Juventus, to be honest. Like, Allegri's back, yeah, but we still don't really seem that much clearer on what his actual aim is for this team. Their end to the season wasn't pretty last season. They did get over the line and finish fourth. Their big signing of the summer, Paul Pogba, won't be seeing him for a little while. He's injured already. That's a blow. The other big signing is Angel Di Maria. I can't get that excited about him, I'm afraid. Like, obviously, he's a good player. He'll have an impact on the season. But he's 34. I think we've seen the best of him. He'll have moments in this league. Don't think that's what Juve had in mind a few years back when they started eyeing all these young players and trying to, like, capitalize on not just, like, dominating football on the pitch, but also in terms of marketing. They were looking for these young players, and that's when they started signing, like, De Ligt and people like that. Now, they've still got Vlahovic, so that's good, and he's very marketable, and he will score goals. But honestly, I think even Vlahovic looks a little bit like he's scratching his head at the moment and slightly broken even about what's happened around him. De Ligt and Chiellini are now gone. Dybala, he's gone too. I think I know. I wasn't sure about why Dybala was doing that, but I do know now. He was just jumping ship because he's seen what's coming. Like, this isn't actually guessing.
You seem very low on Juventus.
Yeah, you've been the Juventus kind of arbiter for so long.
They're not looking that good. Well, they're not looking very good. They're not looking very good. Like, Memphis Depay is on the verge of joining. Well, that's a gamble. I mean, that could be a good signing.
Yeah,
that could be a good signing. But we'll have to wait and see. I mean, do you know one of the main reasons that I'm really, really down on them is because they got absolutely smashed by Atletico Madrid the other day. They lost 4-0. I watched the extended highlights of that game. It could have been about 8-0. They were rubbish, like a proper rubbish. I know a lot of people don't pay any attention to preseason, but sometimes you have to, especially if they get battered. Now, look, Bremer should be a good signing, obviously. They've got Sassuolo on the opening weekend. I think they'll get off to a winning start there, but they've got early games against Roma and Fiorentina, and I think that'll be a good gauge of, like, how far ahead this team are, how far behind they are, whether I'm being too harsh here when I look ahead at this season. I just think that, like, losing the players that they've lost, replacing them with people like Pogba and Di Maria and potentially Memphis Depay isn't a great look. And it's certainly not the look that they were talking about 2 or 3 years ago. They'll be in the title race at some point, I imagine. But that's more to do with the standard of Italy than anything else right now. They shouldn't really have been finishing fourth last season, in my opinion. So yeah, I'm going to be harsh on Juve as we come into the season. They've got a long way to come. I'm not... I'm not that optimistic about this.
Yeah, I mean,
don't sound convinced at all.
You're more optimistic than me, though, because I don't have them in the top four.
Wow. Okay.
There you go.
Well, then it falls to me to be a little bit more positive for the sake of Juventus fans. Filip Kostic would be a great signing. Kostic, yes. And Cuadrado as potential wing backs or flying full backs. I'm really excited.
The problem with that,
by
Sam,
Bremer.
Is that they don't have enough centre backs to play three at the back. They have Bremer and Bonucci.
Danilo.
Fine, but we all know that's a bad idea. And then behind that, what have we got? Regani?
Yeah, Regani.
It's not good enough.
No, it's not good enough. You're right. The defense is still a concern, even with a big signing there. And obviously, as Dean says, you know, talks about the exits there of De Ligt and Chiellini, it does hurt. But once Chiesa comes back, once Kostic settles in, once Pogba returns from injury, if Memphis Depay signs, Di Maria and Vlahovic, there is enough here. 100% there's enough here to hurt teams. Now, whether Allegri actually allows them to do that, I don't know. And that's, he's kind of both a blessing and a curse here, because while he'll probably allow Juventus to punch above their weight while they're missing so many players and while they're settling in, he'll probably limit them and limit their ceiling when they actually get them all back, because he won't let them cook and therefore they won't reach the heights they possibly could. So blessing and a curse in the same vein there. So it's a tough one to gauge, but I'm generally just, I think, a bit more optimistic about Juve. They've got some of the better players in the league. Pogba will return and he'll be really, really good, in my opinion.
I agree.
Locatelli, I think, is due a really good season. I love Bremer. But yeah, they've got a lot of injuries. So Szczesny's out for the start of the season as well. They have a lot of injuries. I can understand some of the pessimism, but yeah, thought I'd balance the argument a bit there. There are reasons to smile if you're a Juventus fan. And if Memphis comes, this will all start to look very different.
Look, I think there's a 3-5-2 here that on the surface looks quite nice. If Memphis does come in, right? You know, that kind of Danilo, Bonucci, Bremer back three, Filip Kostic on one side, Cuadrado on the other, Zachariah, Locatelli, Pogba in the middle, and then Vlahovic and Memphis or Chiesa when he returns, obviously, but that's not going to be for a while. That's a fine. That's a fine. I don't think he starts if they go 3-5-2.
He
can't. He doesn't really have a spot. So there's that. Also, I think there's an element of Di Maria is going to be in and out of this anyway. But that's fine. And I think that first team is probably good enough to just about compete. They could probably do with a little bit of depth. Maybe a right centre back there. They could improve. But on the whole, I like that side. Right. I think it's a good side. What I don't see is any depth. Like whatsoever, aside from, you know, I like some of the youngsters in midfield. I like Ravella, I like Moretti, I like Fagioli as well. But I don't think that these are going to be like, okay, cool, you could come in and drop them in the Champions League semi-final kind of players. And I don't think that there's enough at the back in terms of depth to play three at the back. So I think he's going to abandon that quite quickly because he's bought out and out wingers to play a 4-3-3 and then randomly gone and bought Filip Kostic. It doesn't really make any sense. And that's the kind of squad building you don't expect from this side. You don't expect from Allegri, you know, something that doesn't make sense in that kind of context. For me, it's all a bit weird. You know, Kostic has only really had these breakout seasons as a wingback. He's the perfect wingback in so many ways. So you kind of have to play a three at the back if you've got Kostic in there. You want to use him to his full effectiveness. And I think that puts them in a slightly bizarre situation because they've just gone and bought wingers to try and switch to a 4-3-3.
Well, I think you can play Kostic left mid in a 4-4-2. I think that's okay. It does mean you end up with Alexandre back in there as well, who I think they've been trying to kind of move on from. Kostic left wing, Di Maria on the right, or Chiesa on the right, and then, yeah, Memphis supporting Vlahovic, or for now at least, Di Maria supporting Vlahovic. Again, I can see where they're going. I can see where they're going. And having options is no bad thing. Having a little bit of depth there is no bad thing. But I think, yeah, there are a couple of starting pieces away from genuinely locking it in and us all sitting here thinking, yeah, they're a force. They're not a force. They're still building.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. Fair enough. All right. Let's move it on to their contenders then, DJ.
Yeah. So move on from the Man United of Italy to Inter Milan. And I think Inter Milan really will be looking back and thinking, we should have won that league last season. Oh, we should have won that league. And, you know, they just couldn't capitalize when AC Milan had a stutter. And, you know, there weren't many of them, to be honest. Like, AC Milan were quite consistent, but back end of March, going into April, I think it was, they dropped off a bit, AC Milan, and Inter dropped off worse at the exact same point, basically. And then when we got down to the crunch, the home straight, we were all kind of questioning whether AC Milan could show the elite mentality they would need. And they did. They put together a really strong run to the end of the season to get over the line and win the games they needed to get done. So Inter ended up missing out on the title on the final day by 2 points. Literally just missed out because they drew a game and Milan won a game. They had a better goal difference. I think when you study it, like, Inter Milan are probably a better all-round team. And if you were to play that season over and over again, I think Inter Milan would probably edge it more times than Milan would. So this is going to be tight straight from the off. Now, like Juve, Inter haven't had a particularly good pre-season either. Now, they lost to Villarreal and Lens. They drew with Monaco and Lyon. But, you know, they're good teams to be playing against in pre-season. So it's hard to judge too much on that because sometimes, you know, you don't want to be playing against teams of that similar-ish level, if you like. But they've gone for it. And I'm less concerned about Inter in that sense, especially as they have a style and a winning mentality that they can fall back on from last season and the season before that Juventus do not have. The significant change, obviously, for Inter from last season is that Lukaku is back. And they now need to get back to playing a brand of football that is effective for him. Other transfers, like Mkhitaryan, Onana, like the interesting additions. There's Belanova, Christian Aslani, who I don't know a lot about, but I spoke to someone who did, and he said to me he's basically a Brozovic backup, if there's such a thing. Yeah. You two might know
he's
more.
He's really similar. We ran his 23 radar, and they're very similar in a lot of ways.
I like him a lot.
Brozovic is hard to replace, so that's good. So that's handy straight away. The big miss so far is they haven't got the centre backs that they were expected to get, particularly Bremer, who's ended up at a rival when he was expected to end up with them, and they've still got Skriniar, who's been linked with the transfer all summer, basically. Perisic is gone. Alexis Sanchez is gone. Alexis, you know, you look back on his Inter Milan career, actually not bad. He's actually had decent impact when he came into this team a lot of the time. So generally,
goals per minute, he was doing pretty well because he's often coming off the bench, wasn't he, and making an impact.
He was making an impact. And, you know, generally in football, he would probably branded a flop towards the later years of his career, and you understand why. But at Inter, wasn't really the case, to be honest. Now, he was supposed to get Dybala. That didn't happen. So that's two big misses, Bremer and Dybala. But might not be such a bad thing because we get to see Lautaro and Lukaku working together again. And if that combination clicks straight back into gear, then this is probably all fine. There's not really any concern about Inter Milan scoring goals next season. That's never really been the concern with Inter. They can get goals. But there are concerns about them being caught out defensively. I was messaging one guy just who covers Inter Milan just saying, like, what are the flaws, basically? And he's like, well, the floor is always getting caught on the counter-attack for this team. And he said that's one of the things that Inzaghi had been looking at over the summer, is making fixes for flaws like that. And so he should be. It's his job as a coach, obviously. But that is a flaw that will leave them exposed at times, and they'll have to address as the season wears on. But ultimately, this is Inter Milan. We have to expect a title push at the very least. A lot of people will just be expecting them to be champions. And I think beyond that, they'll probably just be looking to do better in the Champions League as well alongside it.
Yeah, there doesn't look like there's massive holes in this Inter side, right? You look at the kind of outgoings, and the one that kind of grates your eye is Ivan Perisic, who was kind of so crucial across the course of last season. But equally, you then look at that and you go, okay, all right, Robin Gerstens came in January and obviously didn't have all that much game time, got injured, but should be back now. And he's the natural slot back into that space. And actually, that makes a whole lot of sense. They haven't lost... You know, yes, they could have done with a defensive arrival, I agree, but they haven't lost anyone that they expected to lose either, you know, as we speak right now. And I think that's kind of massive, right? You know, I think the Bremer arrival was kind of thinking about the idea of what happened if Skriniar left, you know, or De Vrij left. And actually, none of those things have happened. So actually, the defense looks as pretty solid as it did last season, right? Skriniar, De Vrij, Bastoni, there's no problems there. Yes, they can maybe do with another backup, but ultimately it looks all right from where I'm standing. And, you know, Fede DiMarco can play on the left of that three. He can also play as a wing back. His team looks really, really nicely balanced. And I think that that's probably it. It's just players jumping in here. Onana comes in, obviously. Handanovic is going to get the opportunity to start the season in goal. But you'd imagine it won't be long before and Onana takes that spot, given we know his qualities. And from there, you're looking at this and going, there isn't really any weaknesses, I don't think, in this side. And that makes them relatively good bets to be a title favourite, I think, Sam.
Yeah, love the quality of 11. Lukaku back in town, good depth. I don't really see any problems here. If anything, the only thing I've ended up questioning with Inter over the course of the summer is, you know, I don't think Belanova's any good. So I don't really know why a top team signed him, but he's a backup right wing back, like, and he hasn't cost very much money. So, like, there's only so much you can question there. And I don't really know why they signed Henrik Mkhitaryan either, because he doesn't appear to fit into any of the positions that Simone Inzaghi uses. But these aren't really massive criticisms. This is going to be a really tough season where you're going to need a lot of players. The fixture crunch is going to be pretty horrendous for Champions League clubs. A lot of these players are going to go off to the World Cup, you'd imagine. And you never really know what effect that can have. So someone like Mkhitaryan, who is not going to the World Cup and gets 2 months off in, well, November and into December, might be a genius, a piece of genius in the market. It might be a masterstroke that we hadn't really considered at the time. So we'll see. But the least you can do, really, as for a team in Inter's position here, is upgrade the starting 11, which they've done with Lukaku, and to get ready as best you feel you can for what is going to be a very, very different campaign to anything we've ever seen before. And I think they've done that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There doesn't seem to be any chinks in the armour right now, but obviously we'll have to see how that pans out as the season gets going, which takes us to their cross-city rivals, Dean.
Yeah, the champions of Italy, AC Milan. I'm so happy to say that because it was brilliant, and it was so well-deserved. Like, the journey that they've been on with Pioli and with that group of players and, you know, the doubts that they overcame and, you know, changing little parts of the team as they managed to bring things together. It was a proper, like, coaching job as much as anything else. They recruited well and then they coached them well. And it wasn't always pretty, but they always got the results they needed in that final season to get over the line. Now comes the harder part, because you don't get to celebrate for very long. And it's all about retaining your crown. And I guess in Serie A, it can also become about challenging yourself to become the dominant force in this league, because there's not one at the moment. And there probably is an opportunity for someone to do that. It's hard to see it happening, but the door is open for somebody to, even between now and the deadline day, add a couple of players, particularly for AC Milan, who can take them to an even higher level for next season. Because I think it is worth remembering that the standard of the league last season was probably slightly below what it should have been. It was quite unspectacular at times, Milan's title push. Don't get me wrong, I still enjoyed it. Enjoyed the way they had to go about it. But also since then, you know, losing Frank Kessie, it's a big loss. You're looking at someone like Sandro Tonali now stepping up even further than he did last season, his influence to grow. Origi's arrived. You know, they've made additions so far. It hasn't happened as quickly as they would like. And obviously the big one to kind of talk about is Charlton Kettler. He's the one that seemingly took about 2 months to get done, but they did do it, unlike some of the others they've been pursuing. Yassine Adli, they've also signed. Big impact signings that were needed to bring competition for places, but also new creativity in that squad. So I think that's all a positive for AC Milan. I don't think this squad's complete, though. I mean, Sam might know more than this. He's got better connections than me at Milan. But, you know, there's the whole conversation that's taken place about the right-sided attacker, basically. Who's that going to be? And Hakim Ziyech keeps being spoken about. Various people have been touted for that role all summer. They probably do have a thinner squad. Well, they definitely do than Inter, possibly even than Juve. Tonali got an injury the other day, and it was bit panic stations for a little bit, figuring out like how long he's going to be out for. It doesn't look like he's going to be too bad. Might should only miss one game, I think. And on the flip of that, holding on to Rafael Leao, that's huge at the moment. I'm glad he stayed. Expect big output from him this season, I think. He'll probably step up another gear. He's still only 23. 10 assists, 11 goals last season for him in Serie A. It was good. I think he can be even better now. I think he'll expect that from himself too. You know, he's started to be linked to clubs in other countries now. Might be that this is his last season with Milan. Who knows? Depends how it all goes for him. And also depends how it goes for Milan. But yeah, they kick off against Udinese at San Siro on Saturday. And it's really important, this first thrust of the season, basically 15 games before we go on pause for the World Cup. And it's a really big first 15 games for Milan to assert themselves on this league and show that it wasn't a fluke that they won the league last season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for Milan, it's just a case of picking up where you left off in terms of that defensive solidity. And you can figure all of the other questions out on the fly as you go through the season. You know, whether or not later in the transfer window, they do get a right winger, they do get a little bit of help. Which role does CDK play? How does losing Kessié affect the midfield? All of these things, it's like you can basically mask over all of these things and work it all out on the fly if Tomori, Kalulu and Maignan all play at the same level they did last year in the last 10 games, where they basically didn't concede a goal for like 2 months. It just gives you the most wonderful platform to work off. And Milan are in a really good position there. They've got a really nice fixture to start things. Obviously, reigning champions at home, Udinese very beatable 2-0. And you can just see the snowball rolling from there, can't you? It's quite easy to see. But I mean, they've got some things to sort out in the market. I don't know where their head's at right now. There have been some problems with the fact that the takeover still isn't officially completed. Don't think it goes through until September, which has created even more red tape around all of the moves they're trying to make. They've been talking about a Tomori new deal, needs several meetings for that. It should be really easy because he wants to stay and they love him, but it's just all so difficult because there's so many people involved. Probably a little bit like the Newcastle takeover, Dean, when you were like, well, I don't know who's in charge here. There's about eight people that think they're in control of transfers. It's not transfer work. It's administration and business. And there's just a lot of people involved. So it's been very complicated. They should have invested more. They should have strengthened further, but there's still a bit of time and they do have something they can pick up and just take to the pitch again opening week. And yeah, the depth, you're right. The depth isn't quite there either.
I mean, it might work
nowhere near
favor,
as deep
but,
as squad
you know,
of Inter.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to make too many changes to a team that's been built in the way that they've been built. And that's probably something that can work in their favour. The fact that this first part of the season is short as well, it only goes to November. You've got the break and then you've got the January transfer window. Well, that could be a good time to bring in those reinforcements because they'll be able to see where they have fallen short. I mean, it's only at the end of the day going to be one or two players short if they are going to be short. So that can be corrected too. And then this whole process should also be smoothed out that you've been talking about there in terms of the administration side.
Yeah, absolutely. You sort of hang in there, don't you, for 15 games and see what happens.
Yeah.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because, you know, there's still some questions to be answered, as you say. But this midfield here of, you know, Bennacer and Tonali, or at least the pivot, feels like it's only going to go from strength to strength. You know, these are two players who were so good last year and still have room to grow and improve. And I feel like if you're basing it off that, and obviously Tomori and Kalulu were brilliant, Kjær will come back at some point as well and give some depth to that centre-back pairing. That bit of the field feels pretty solid. And Calabria and Teo, Calabria's fine and Teo's excellent. So these are, you know, this bit of the field, that kind of back seven, if you will, feels like it's in a good place. And then you look at the front three, or the front four, and you're kind of looking at Leao being the kind of standout star. Rebic has played up front for most of preseason with basically nobody else available. And it does that kind of set a weird precedent. I'm not quite 100% sure what's happened to Divock Origi, but we expect him to return and lead the line at some point.
No, he's a super sub, mate. You've not been watching Liverpool the last 3 years.
I have. I feel like he's maybe done with being a super sub, otherwise he'd probably still be at Liverpool. The right wing's a slight concern, although if Charles Ketelaere plays there, then maybe there's an answer there. And then you've got Brahim Diaz and Adli in the middle here. Now, I don't know if Adli's going to play in this 10 or a little bit deeper, but he did create like 2.3 chances per 90. across the season in France last season for a Bordeaux side that got relegated. You know, he is an unbelievable creative presence to have in there, and he can kind of operate in that 10 role or further back. And I think that gives them a nice little bit of balance to this side that allows them to change things up a little bit in terms of shape. And on the whole, yes, again, depth necessary, but it only takes one or two more big signings here. I think a centre back and a centre midfielder, and maybe someone to play on the right wing, especially if the Salamakers to Eintracht deal is actually going to go through. But on the whole, I still think this squad is excellent, and I still think they'll be up there, you know, come April, challenging for this title.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No doubt about that. I mean, I still expect them to be up there. I mean, I'd caveat with, it wouldn't totally surprise me if they fell away. I think that's probably the one thing that niggles away at me, is because they haven't been up there all these years challenging. I do worry about a team, how quickly they can fall away again. That's why it's such a big challenge for Pioli, especially this season, and why the recruitment does need to be spot on, because, you know, Juve eventually will come back, maybe, unless they are doing a Man United and are gone for 8 years now. Inter Milan, though, will be there. And then you will get somebody else emerge. Like Napoli could have a strong season again. Somebody else could come through, whether it's, you know, Roma, for example, force an unexpected challenge. So there's that test of mentality again, I guess, for Milan.
I'll give you a clue. It's Fiorentina. Sam, I think that's a nice place to take it on to you and to the challengers, the people trying to break into this title race and also, you know, fighting for these top four spots and Champions League as well.
Yeah, so I'll take three clubs as well, and we'll consider this much more of a top four battle, I think. And we'll start with Napoli, who Dean unceremoniously left out of his title challenging pack, despite the fact that only 5 minutes into what he said, he also disregarded Juventus from the title chase too. So it's tough times with Dean Jones if you're an Italian club. But that Napoli finished third last season. Unfortunately, the summer probably hasn't quite gone to plan for them in terms of maybe building on that success. They've lost three modern legends this summer, and that there's no other way to describe them. Dries Mertens, who is their all-time top goalscorer, Lorenzo Insigne, Neapolitan boy and captain, and Kalidou Koulibaly, possibly the best defender in Serie A over the last 6-7 years. And while obviously not on the same level, we're taking a big step down here. They've also lost their starting goalkeeper for the last 3 years in David Ospina, and we're also expecting Fabian Ruiz to leave the club as well. He's linked heavily to PSG. So the quality loss here is absolutely tremendous. And coupled with the turnover that creates, I think it's going to be really, really hard for them to maintain the level that they've set over the last couple of years, which has been a really high level. It's been close to 80 points last two seasons, 79 and 77. They've made some good signings, like Matias Oliveira, good left back, Kim Min-jae, good centre back, and Giese is now permanent. Guevara, the Georgian winger and playmaker, don't know too much about him, but it's an exciting signing. And these guys are probably at the right age profile as well, but like, they've lost four amazing players, absolutely amazing players, and David Ospina, who started in goal for 3 years. So all of that, you know, consistency and all of those relationships at the back have just been split up. And they're still scratching around for signings. You know, they want to sign Kaylor Navas. They want to sign Raspadori from Sassuolo. It looks like they're maybe, you know, signing Giovanni Simeone from Hellas Verona.
Yes.
So all of a sudden, Napoli, you know, in possibly the worst possible time, three, four days before the start of the season, they're in a flurry. Everything's exploded and they're suddenly trading players in and out and trying to find key pieces. Like, they're not really in a great spot right now as we kick the season off. And it is, to me, a little bit of a concern.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think there's been some interesting bits and bobs thrown around, in that obviously you can't replace Koulibaly and Mertens and Insigne in the same level. What you can do is, you know, just do it on the aggregate, to quote Moneyball, right? you can bring in a host of players who between them can maybe make up some differences. Now, Matias Oliveira from Getafe, I think, is a good signing at left back. I'm interested to see how Min-jae Kim does. Obviously came in for quite a lot of money from Fenerbahce. Yeah, there's Kuecha, as you say, who's very, very exciting and has been brilliant in preseason. It looks like, you know, there's a couple more coming in here. Raspadori looks like it's close. Simeone looks like it's close, as you say. Sirigu, I thought, was a good pickup as a backup goalkeeper. And Keylor Navas looks like he's going to be included as part of the Fabian Ruiz deal going the other way. So we've wished that one into existence. So,
yeah,
so there
right.
are things to be, you know, things to be excited about here, I think. And on the aggregate, it feels like they're getting stronger. I really like the idea of Raspadori playing alongside Osimhen. That's exciting. And I like the idea of either of them playing with Gio Simeone. So to be honest, there's things here that I'm interested in. I wonder if they'll go 4-4-2, which seems like the natural thing to do if you lose someone of Fabian Ruiz's quality in the middle. And from there, I think Napoli are probably the most... They have the capacity, I think, for the highest drop or rise from where they sit currently in my kind of rankings, are around fourth. Like there is a chance if all this clicks, Napoli are in a title race. And if it doesn't click, then they're out of the European picture altogether. And that's a pretty nuts place to be.
Three words for you. Diego, Demi, Remontada. They're going to win Serie A.
So.
I've just decided on the spot. Diego Demi gets 38 starts and they win the league. Easy.
Okay.
No, I mean, I appreciate your optimism, Jack, but they're just obviously clearly nowhere near as good as they were last season, despite the fact that they're making some good signings. And I don't think you can survive that level of upheaval, particularly with the importance of the players. So I think it's going to be tough for Napoli to make the top four. I think more likely to make them are the following two clubs. And we'll start with Lazio. Second year under Sarri usually comes with a relatively decent wedge of improvement. They've made some really good signings. Luis Maximiano from Granada, really good goalkeeper, perfect for Sarri's system. Marcos Antonio from Shakhtar Donetsk, perfect for Sarri's system. Exceptional fits and upgrades on what they had. They have seemingly revamped their entire centre-back core, which I found an odd move, but probably speaks to how Sarri viewed his defence last season, and you do have to react when you lose a very important player like Luis Felipe. So it is tough.
I'm hot working on Casale. In their favour. I like Casale a lot, and I think he'll suit Sarri's system. He's good on the ball.
And Romagnoli's good on the ball too. You know,
he's just perpetually broken, so I just think we can ignore him.
He can't turn, move, or run, but he's good at passing. But anyway, they still got Immobile. They still got Sergej Milinkovic-Savic. They've still got Luis Alberto. The 11 still feels strong. Like with every other club we've discussed, bar Inter, the depth might be lacking a little bit, but Sarri usually lifts the floor on a team like this, particularly in year two. And then we move to our beloved Roma, who have had a really fun summer. They've signed Paulo Dybala. They signed
Is this the best
Gini
summer
Wijnaldum.
In Europe?
No.
Do you not think? I think it might be.
Why?
Like every piece, I think, apart from Svilar, is an upgrade. Every piece.
Well, who cares about Svilar? Who cares about backup goalkeepers? But yeah, I mean, Wijnaldum, great player. Matt, I am like genuinely like still pretty half convinced that Matic, he can only do 45 minutes at the top level. And I know we have five subs. But if he goes in and bosses Serie A, I'm going to ask serious questions about that league, man, because he looked gassed after 45 minutes in every Premier League game he played last year. He just couldn't keep up. But Dybala,
I think you can play him in games where you're not getting run through, right? Like if you, you know, at that point, you know, you can play him in games where you're dominant because he can just sit and he doesn't need to, you know, to do much. He can just recycle. I think that's what's going to be important at Roma this year.
Hopefully, but I mean, it didn't really matter who we played against last year. He was gassed after 45 minutes. Opponent was not a factor. But hey, Zeki Celik to bolster fullback. Cool. Dybala, really exciting. Wijnaldum, really smart acquisition, I think. Matic, okay, good to have in the rotation. They've lost pretty much no one that they cannot go without. Mkhitaryan to Inter probably stings a little bit, but Dybala just kind of makes you forget all about that. Henrik who? And year two of Jose, trophy under their belts, upward momentum. Of these three clubs, I'd back Roma the strongest to finish inside the top four.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think this is a remarkable summer. I think they've covered all the weak spots, aside from maybe they could really do with a first choice bold centre back addition. And if they get one of those, then
they don't need any of those.
Well, they've only got four centre backs and they play a back three. So, like, I do worry a little bit about that, to be perfectly honest with you.
Till you see Nemanja Matic left centre back, buddy.
Well, yeah. Well, let's worry about that when we get to it, shall we? But I think they could do with a centre back. Apart from that, I'm just pretty hot on this whole squad. Like, I think it's a really nicely balanced team, and that's what I look for: balance. And ultimately, at this point, I think Roma are the best prepared out of those three, although I do like Lazio's business as well a lot. I just think they're in a good spot. I'm happy. I think this is a nice place for Roma to be in.
Agreed, but they haven't had the best summer.
Who has?
We'll have to see on September the 1st.
Okay, all right. All right, I'm happy to say it so far.
Hang on a minute. Weren't we on a preview podcast... What, 2 days ago with Alan? And you were like, surely Barcelona. This Barcelona is the greatest summer window of all time.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But Ernie, that you have to caveat that with the fact that at the moment Barcelona can't register any of those players, which would completely and utterly ruin the window. So at the moment, Roma are the ones with the players registered, and right now they sit at the top of the list. I think PSG are probably in this conversation as well. You'd argue they've had a good summer, but I think Roma are in the conversation, and that's good enough for me right now. Good enough for me. I'm going to take us on quickly to the other two sides who have been in and around the European places of late. Fiorentino finished seventh last year and Atalanta, who finished eighth. Now, trying to assess Atalanta's outward transfer business is incredibly difficult because what they've done, as usual, is send 400 million players on loan. So trying to wade through that and just try and find the ones that they're actually getting rid of is pretty tricky. But there are some very interesting things going on. And we've seen some big losses, I think, at Atalanta. We've just seen Remo Freuler is on his way out. He's going to be joining Nottingham Forest by all accounts. And I think that when you're looking at, you know, the fact that they lost Robin Gerson's last year, and the kind of fact that the only players that have been brought in really are either loanees coming back, or Ademola Lookman or Edison, who came in centre midfield from Salernitana, who I think is a good bit of business, to be perfectly honest with you. I thought he was excellent for Salernitana last year. It does just feel a bit like what's going on here with where they're going, I suppose, is probably the way I'd put it. There's a lot of loans out. There's a lot of players who are like, hang on, where are you off to? Why have you gone? They've loaned about 15 players to Empoli for the crack, apparently. And we're just seeing like this kind of mix of things happen that I'm not completely comfortable with. I'm worried about Atalanta, you know. This is the thing. Like, you're looking at this and thinking, okay, where are you strengthening from last year where you came eighth? And I know that they had European competition to contend with, but I think they've got worse. And that's a worry, considering that I think Fiorentina have got significantly stronger in this window. They've signed Dodo, a right back, who I really like. And I thought that, to be honest, Real Madrid should have been looking at as a kind of Carvajal long-term replacement. I think he's really, really good. They've brought in Mandragora, who's a bit of a kind of, well, an enigma in many ways. We haven't seen him play football properly for ages. So I'm not 100% sure what Mandragora brings to the side, but I'm sure we will see because he will get minutes this year. He's still only 25. He feels like he's been around forever. And he's still only 25 years old. Luka Jovic has come in on a free transfer, which is almost certainly the best bit of business in the entire summer. Pierluigi Gallini has come in on a loan from Atalanta or cancelled that loan at Tottenham and has come in to be first choice goalkeeper. Dragowski has left to go to Spezia, so he will be the first choice keeper. And then from there, they haven't lost yet, at the very least, any of the big guns. You're looking at Milenkovic. Castrovilli's obviously injured at the moment, but he hasn't left. It doesn't feel like they've got significantly weaker in any position here. They've brought in some really good signings. There's talk of Giovanni Lo Celso being the next to come through the door at Fiorentina. I think they are in a very good place. I expect Arthur Cabral to kick on this year. I expect Jonathan Okone to kick on this year. I expect Nico Gonzalez to continue the level of form that he showed last year. I know there's Europe to contend with and there's a little bit more of things to kind of cover and make sure you have to rotate for. But I really like this. I really like the business. And I think Fiorentina are on an upward trajectory under Italiano.
Well, the good news for...
Right now.
The good news for Fiorentina is that manager Vincenzo Italiano is brilliant at rotation because he does it all the time, even when his club isn't in Europe. predicting Fiorentina 11s last season was like, it was some of the hardest tasks you give a human being. For absolutely no reason at all, he would just change six players. They could win 4-0 and he'd just change six of them, even if they had a full week off. So the guy knows how to rotate, Jack. So
Italiano
preparing
for Europe last season. He knew what was coming.
He did. He knew. And he's got all the practice in. And so he knows exactly how to rotate his squad for a European campaign. So, yeah, I mean, of the two teams there, I mean, Fiorentina clearly in a better place. I do worry for Atalanta that they've lost their charm. They've lost their sparkle a little bit. A lot of it was going to be based on how long some truly extraordinary players could carry on. And with, you know, Ilicic sort of dropping off, Papu Gomez is long gone. Actually selling Freuler, you know, one of the last bastions of that kind of mini era.
Yeah, I don't like it at all, mate.
I don't love it. You know, their transfer wheeling and dealing over the years has basically meant that we should trust them with the moves they make. But looking at their league position year on year for the last 3 years, they just keep slipping down the league. And it's getting harder to trust the fact that Atalanta are, you know, nailing the window. Oh, that's a brilliant deal. Oh, they've moved on from him at the right time. It's harder to believe that. And when I look at Fiorentina and how they're building and strengthening, I do think that they're in a better spot. And I mean, I think Fiorentina might be in a better spot than Napoli, to be honest with you.
I really think
those exits that we talked about from Napoli are gonna ring true and gonna really hurt them. So exciting stuff for Fiorentina.
Yeah, it's the Velvet Revolution, or the Violet Revolution, maybe I should say. Well underway under Vincenzo Italiano. Everyone's having a nice time in Florence right now. Let's come away from the top eight and talk about some regression candidates. I mean, we've just talked about Atalanta and they might be in this conversation, to be honest, but I'm going to throw it to you quickly, Sam, and see where we get to.
Yeah, Atalanta definitely a contender for that, but I've got a couple of names to throw into the ring. I think the first one is going to be Sassuolo because they're going to have to try and replace Gianluca Scamacca and Raspadori. And I just don't see how a club like Sassuolo, with their budget and their status, can genuinely do that. I think it might be impossible. So they need to do what every smart club would do, and it's what they have been doing, which is to bolster the rest of the team and build out from a quantity perspective and buy players who are 21, 22, 23, ready for that next step. They've done it. They've gone out to Uruguay, Belgium, Brazil, Norway, and they've picked up a bunch of players who look like they could be quite promising. I'm not going to pretend to know tons about all of them, but I think they're probably shopping in the right markets. But yeah, if they could go and buy a player that could replace Scamacca, they would. They literally can't. And so if you take all of those goals and that influence out of this team, what happens to it? It probably slides down the league a little bit. That's the awkward reality of it. And it's not really anything that they can do about. Like, they can't stop it. It's just going to happen. And the second club is Torino. And it's a similar argument. I mean, they're... sixth all-time top goal scorer is gone. Andrea Belotti. I give him a lot of shit on this podcast, but he scored 113 goals for Torino. He's a massively important presence.
It's almost if he's really good, yeah.
Massively important presence for Torino, and he's gone. As has Serie A Defender of the Year, Gleison Bremer. I just don't see how you can finish in the top 10 if you're Torino and you've lost those two people.
Yeah, I mean, they have at least the managerial carryover, right? Which is important because Juric is excellent and he's done a really, really good job there. And I think that obviously it's going to be very difficult to do this. I'm also very, very worried about Sassuolo, man, because you look at these kind of outgoings, right? And it's not just the fact that Scamacca has gone. Jeremy Boga obviously spent last year on loan at Atalanta and has left personally. Sergio Caputo, yes, he's 34. But has scored a lot of goals for them, gone. Filip Juricic, gone. It now looks like Raspadori is going to Napoli. So the only one left is Domenico Berardi, and he can't do it on his own. Much as he is absolutely brilliant, he can't do it on his own. Now, they've brought in Alvarez from Peñarol, who I don't know very much about, but 10 million for a 21-year-old is a lot. I do really like Christian Thorsvet, though, who they brought in from Genk, who's an attacking midfielder. And I think that's a clever bit of business. But I've got to say, I'm just as worried, and maybe a little bit more worried, for Hellas Verona, because they've not only lost their manager, Igor Tudor, who did really well there, to Marseille, they've brought in Gabriele Chioffi. So you can hope that he's in the cappuccino game a lot, eh? They look
it
like
would work
gonna...
if his name it would work, but his name's Joffy.
Yeah, but it's kind of the same, isn't it?
Sometimes
you've got to force it. You've got to force it. It looks like they're going to lose Gio Simeone as well. And I think that you look at that and you go, okay, what's that going? Caprari's gone. He's gone off to Monza, which is a bit nuts, frankly, considering how good and how many goals he scored last season. Sakanya was obviously on loan at Lazio and he's gone there permanently. They've got lost Casale to Lazio as well. I'm looking at this side and going, I don't know how this is going to work. I like Thomas Henry as a pickup. I think that's neat. I think that's a really good little bit of business. But apart from that, I'm looking at this and going, not sure about almost any of it. And I think under new management, Hellas could be in real trouble, like real trouble. I think they could be, you know, 14th, 15th. And I'm not saying they're going to get relegated, but I just can't see them being able to back up what they've lost here in the market, especially if they lose Simeone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you. I think they'll probably take a step back, so they will regress. But I didn't want to put them in with Sassuolo and Torino because I actually really, really like Gabriele Cioffi like, as a manager. He did an amazing job with Udinese last season. He came in partway through the season and really kicked him into shape. And at one point, Udinese were in the relegation zone. That's when they picked up their new manager. And he basically led them to sailing clear. He did a really good job with not that much, let's be honest with you. I spent quite a lot of time on this podcast last year talking about how I was watching a lot of Udinese and I wasn't sure why because they weren't very good. But Cioffi did a really good job. So they got Tudor taken off them very suddenly. It could have been a disaster, but this has gone pretty well. And given that I don't like Gio Simeone, I have to stay true to my narrative and say that this will be an overwhelming positive for them.
You cannot say that you're worried about Torino because they've lost Belotti and then be like, nah, it doesn't matter if they lose Gio Simeone. You just can't.
No, I can't. That's complete bollocks. You're right.
But yeah, no, I think I'm worried about them. I think this could be a big slide. Obviously, they've been top 10 for a little while now and kind of, I think a regression back into the bottom half of this table is going to be kind of unavoidable in many ways. Let's look lastly at the bottom of this table. And the big story, I suppose, is Monza, right? Bankrolled by Bunga Berlusconi, who has returned to the Serie A scene after some years away with Monza. And he has made, or under his direction, at least, they have made some very sensible signings. I just talked about Gianluca Caprari, who scored a lot of goals last season for Hellas. He's come in. But what they've brought in here is some real experience, you know, in Serie A. They've brought in Andrea Ranocchia, who's, yes, he's 34, but is a kind of war horse in this division and has been for a long time. They've brought in Pablo Mari, who was obviously on loan last season at Udinese, but he has played in this division before. They've brought in Pessina from Atalanta. They've brought in Stefano Sensi from Inter. And as we all know, when Sensi scores, whoever he plays for, win. That is
No. It was if Sensi scores, Inter win.
Sensi scores, Monza win.
No, it's not. It's still the same. So we'll be interested to see the correlation on the match day. Now he plays for a different club.
If Sensi scores, Inter win. If Sensi scores, Monza win. We can have them both, to be perfectly honest with you. But yeah, you know, Cranio's come in from Cagliari, which I think is a good bit of business as well. He's a good goalkeeper at this level. And they brought in Marlon from Shakhtar Donetsk on loan, the Brazilian centre-back. I just feel like they've signed really well. This is a really good bit of work, frankly, across the Monza board. And they appear to have built a team that know what they're doing. I fancy Monza to not only to kick around in the division, but actually finish about 12th. I think this side is going to do really well. I like them a lot. So there you have it. There you have it. The other sides, Cremonese, just don't look that strong. Although they have, Sam, signed Cyril Dessers. Hero of the Europa Conference League, Cyril the Conference Cannon is going to be Cyril the Cremonese Cannon from now on. We have to keep an eye on him. That's very exciting. But I don't think they've picked up well enough to not go down again. And Lecce are famously the yo-yo side of Calcio, frankly. They bounce between the divisions at will. So I can't see anything that's going to stop that for the time being. Although I am interested in the profile of players they picked up. They've picked up, a winger from Petah Tikva in Israel. They've picked up an 18-year-old defensive midfielder, Daniel Samek from Slavia Prague. And they picked up Joel Persson from Roma under-19s, who is a Swedish centre forward. It's a real like mix of things they've done here. They've gone like, yeah, we'll just take loads of random young players from across Europe and see how they get on. So that's interesting, but I don't know if it's going to be enough. The other side I'm just concerned about, I think Salernitana, under the experienced hand of David Houdini Nicola, are going to be absolutely fine. So they'll stay out of it again this year because of what we saw last year. I'm a little bit worried about Sampdoria. They brought in, as you say, Chicha Caputo. They brought in Thomas Rincon. They brought in Filip Juricic. Some good signings. And Gonzalo Villar from Roma, who kind of never really got going in Rome. But they've lost Damsgaard. They've lost Morten Thorsby. And there's just kind of a lot of players here going, ugh, not quite sure how this is going to pan out. And I have a funny feeling that Sampdoria, after celebrating Genoa getting relegated last season, and the parade through the streets of blue and red with a coffin with Genoa flag on it, et cetera, et cetera. I've got a funny feeling they might be joining their city rivals in Serie B next season if they're not very careful towards the end of this window.
Wow.
They probably won't even join them either because Genoa are probably going to come straight back up.
The worst Genoa. Well, it's funny to see how if the worst Genoa are still the worst Genoa in Serie B, you'd imagine they probably won't be.
I think they'll win the division.
Okay, well, that's good. You get some Serie B predictions in your Serie A podcast here this week, Rank Squad. So be grateful for that. Excellent. Right, Sam, I think all that's left to do is should we pick out a player to watch? Seems like a nice way to round this podcast off.
Yeah, can do. Bit of a breakout star I want to watch. And you actually mentioned him very briefly earlier. And it was to my relief that you said that you thought it was, and I quote, a nice bit of business. It's Ederson, who is signed with Atalanta. I think this is the reason they're moving on from Remo Freuler. I can't be certain, but I think they might have a lot of faith in this guy. I mean, he has cost like 19 million quid, which for a player who has like 6 months worth of experience in Serie A, and was signed from Salernitana and only joined them in January from his Brazilian club, I think it was Corinthians. It's quite a lot. It's quite a big bet. But every time I caught Salernitana towards the end of last season during their great escape, Ederson really stuck out to me. He's roughly 6 foot tall, box-to-box midfielder, great acceleration, explodes into space, gets into the box, is trying to get on the end of stuff, headers, little toes on stuff, taking shots. He also has great feet, great change of direction, drops the shoulder really well for a relatively large guy. I think he's going to be on quite a few more people's radars in about 6 months' time. I think he's going to have a really good time of it at Atalanta. So exciting player and a reason to smile for Atalanta in a podcast that we may have just given mostly reasons not to smile.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I'm going to go for a centre midfielder as well, and one that I mentioned there in another team that I think are going to struggle. It's SAS, Christian Thorsvet, who I really, really like. He's kind of moved very quickly up through the age groups, very quickly up in an international sense. Also, he moved from Viking to Genk just before he turned 21, done 2 years there. And I think he's a lovely profile, 6 foot two, but very skillful, very good on the ball, wins a lot of duels in there as well and can play further forward. But I think that actually he's going to end up playing further back in this centre midfield zone for SAS. And I just really like his profile. I think he's someone that, you know, can kind of win the ball in there, can make things happen, has the ability to play centre attacking midfield if he needs to, and can kind of has the vision and sense to play in those spaces, but also can build from deep and play make from a little bit of a deeper role. So yeah, someone that I'm really excited about watching, even if I am concerned for Sassuolo. Right then, on that bombshell, I think it's probably time for us to wrap this up.
Are you back into in the league?
Ooh.
Go.
No, that's 5x5 territory.
That's 5x5 territory, unfortunately.
No,
it's 5x5 territory. We're going to have to hold it. I will tell you.
I'll press subscribe and I'll come back another day.
Yeah, exactly. You'll have to wait around. Start of September when we do our 5x5 predictions, the top five places in each of the top five leagues, in order to find out exactly where we're putting things. It gives us a chance to gauge the rest of the transfer market and to just see how the season begins as well. Obviously, it's important for our predictions league, which you can find over on our Patreon. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you so much for listening. If you've listened to all six preview podcasts, you are an absolute gem. You are a star. Thank you so much for sticking sticking with us. We hope you've enjoyed the extra content over the last 2 weeks or so. It's been a lot of fun to make, a lot of work, a lot of reading, a lot of researching, but a lot of fun to make. And in that vein, thank you so much to Mr. Sam Sider, Rank God.
Cheers, mate.
And thank you very much to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
Jack Collins, this has been Ranks FC, the final of your big season preview series on Serie A. We hope you've enjoyed the lot. If you haven't listened to the rest of them, go back and do it. They're all on the feed. You can listen to our previews for the Premier League, for La Liga, for Liga, for Bundesliga, and for the Portuguese Primeira as well. All here on the Ranks FC main feed. Thank you so much for sticking with us. We will see you next week, gang. Take it easy. Peace.
Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Hey, go-getters. Let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. With 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on NoomLife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.